But I think in every category, there's opportunity. In every category. Mm. In banking, in the motor vehicle category, in insurance, in we're working on Clipdrift at the moment, and it was clear for us in the alcohol space. An example in the alcohol space is like, I don't think alcohol advertising is very fun anymore, which is the very heart. Alcohol is at the center of socializing.
Yeah.
And so, you know, if you're going to, which is with your mates, and it should be fun. And so why does the advertising not reflect that?
How does marketing continue to shift business, influence culture, and grow brands? To get insights on these and many other questions, we had the privilege of attending the IMC conference, which was themed Marketing is Business. In this IMC conference series, we spoke to creative industry thought leaders where we asked them some of the most pressing business questions. For actionable insights which can shift your brand communication, stay tuned.
And we're now joined by Dean Olshig, the MD and founder of Halo, an agency that I've been watching and whose work we've all been seeing, especially if you're in Joburg, with Pineapple. Dean, the last time we spoke, you just started that Pineapple work. And I think, if I'm not mistaken, about 6 or so months ago, that work was taken down, new work was put up. And it was so evident that the work was taken down because those billboards became empty, and that became a bit of a talking point. What have you seen in terms of, I guess, the work that you've done with Pineapple and almost this, probably, in my view, the sort of renaissance of out of home that we're seeing quite a bit? Is it that even?
I think a lot of media, outdoor media companies owe us a bit.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think we've somehow managed to make out of home cool again.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, out of home has worked really, really well for them. We've seen, it's been 3 years now since we ran the first Pineapple campaign. We've probably done 8 campaigns since. So we are still trying to kind of keep them fresh every 6 months and, yes, and come up with new ideas, which is always a challenge. But, you know, we have high expectations. And yeah, one of the things that we're really proud of is the results are showing. You know, they keep having record month after record month in terms of policy sales until actual business results. And it just goes to show that, you know, you don't need to be too rational and functional in the messaging. You can just try and make it your people's favorites. And if you stand out and get noticed and people remember you, then, you know, when the time comes to buy insurance, that'll be one of the considerations that they think about.
And I think, I mean, that work is very clear in terms of who it resonates with and who it doesn't. It's like one of those pieces of work that's not too generic, not trying to appeal to everyone, where you're deliberate in that.
Yeah, we knew exactly who our market was. There's enough insurance companies that speak to people over 40.
Yes.
And they still speak to people in the way that audience probably respects and needs to be spoken to. Mm-hmm. But the Pineapple work is very much the 25 to 40-year-old age bracket. It's a generation that probably has never felt that insurance specifically has ever spoken to them in their language.
Yeah.
And that's very deliberate in the way that we've adopted meme culture. We've poked fun at Pineapple, we've poked fun at insurance, we've poked fun at advertising.
Yeah.
And we've ended up with in a place now where there's real brand fans, and it's unheard of.
Yeah.
Realistically, 10 years ago in the insurance space, just shows that there's no category that can actually give you a bad brief. Like, anything is possible as long as you prepare to put the time in. It's worked really well, as I said, and there's definitely an age. We can see it in the feedback.
Yes.
A lot of older people are like, oh, this is rubbish, I don't get it. And that's fine. Like, if you don't have any haters, you're not going to have any lovers.
That's it.
And we've always accepted that. And so drilled down on that. But as long as the people who love the brand continue to love the brand and they defend the brand, which is amazing to see.
Yeah. I suppose the out-of-home question is related to the title of your talk today, to look where no one else is looking. Where aren't people looking? Just to give our viewers and listeners a little bit of a summary of your talk.
So the title of our talk is built around, it actually starts at the beginning.
Right? Yeah.
A brand needs a really compelling positioning before you can do any kind of creative work. And then they need a positioning that they have the confidence in that they can last 10 years. 20 years, have a break, have a Kit Kat has been around since 1957.
Yes, yeah.
Hasn't changed in 68 years. But it's such a strong platform that is that allows creatives to continually express new creative ways of doing campaigns for that positioning, right? And so Pineapple specifically, we looked at the category to try find what was clear space. And we did that in the positioning strategy right up front, and we knew where we could play. Yep. That was different to everyone else. Then we did it out of home as well with the way that we called it the Volcano Technique, where we took 106 sites and it very localized, very centralized, and just pumped it so people would make noise about it.
Yeah.
But I think in every category, there's opportunity. In every category, in banking, in the motor vehicle category, in insurance, in we were working on Clipdrift at the moment, and it was clear for us in the alcohol space. An example in the alcohol space is I don't think alcohol advertising is very fun anymore, which is the very heart. Alcohol is at the center of socializing.
Yeah.
And so, you know, if you're going to, which is with your mates, and it should be fun. And so why does the advertising not reflect that? And so we've looked at, it's always our starting point and our departure point on any brand we work on. We've done it with R&B recently. We've done it with Pineapple. We've done it with Auto in general. We've done it with Clipdrift. And we'll continue to do that. And I think brands need to be honest about themselves and go, do we have something that feels completely different to the category?
Yes.
And then is that compelling enough that we can do enough consistently great creative work on that platform for 10 years.
Yeah.
And then, you know, if you look where no one else is looking and you can start doing that, then you're going to start standing out. And that's the main objective of advertising is to get noticed.
Mm. There's something happening in the industry at the moment, and I would say it's cyclical. It happens time and time again, but it's been happening a lot over the past 2-3 years, especially in the past year, where there seems to be this rise of the independent challenger agency. You would know that Bananas won Gold at Cannes with their work for KFC Thailand.
Yeah.
I was talking to Melusi earlier, who's recently won Nando's. You are referring to some of the brands that you are talking about. I know that you guys also started Second Rodeo, whereas, as I understand it, you've got Pick and Pay as well. So what is happening right now for the independent agency is rising?
So I'm biased, obviously, but interesting at Ad Focus last year, Small Agency of the Year was independent, Medium Agency of the Year was independent, Large Agency of the Year was independent, Specialist Agency of the Year was independent. So they are rising, and there's a lot to do with the turmoil, I think, that's happening at a holding company level globally. Mm. There's no secret that, you know, WPP is going through some stuff. IPG and Omnicom are merging. So there's a bit of unease, I think, what's going on. And those businesses were built on business models that happened that were relevant 20 years ago.
Yeah.
I'm not saying they're not going to come right. There's some great non-independent agencies out there. But currently, I think the clients are more prepared to go with smaller better quality work, and what I mean by that, just I don't want to take that out of context. What I mean by that is a smaller independent, or an independent, actually not a smaller, just an independent, I think has a lot more freedom and flexibility in everything that they do. They can look at the way that they hire, the people they hire, the culture they build, and the business models that they create. They're not beholden to a holding company in London.
Yeah.
And what's happened in the non-independents is that they are they're answering to income statement pressure from holding company head offices,
yeah.
and at the other end, procurement has obviously become a big player at client side, and so what's happening is that those two, the holding companies want margin, and the procurements want they want good prices, and so who gets squeezed in that is the people, and the only way you can counter that as a big non-independent holding company is you have to instill process, and unfortunately process is the enemy of creativity. And so these Bananas is a great example. Like, you know, I know Saf and Just really well, and they're operating with a level of freedom that I think the big guys don't have at this stage, and clients are prepared to take the chance on that now. They've seen that, and so we're seeing a massive rise of independence. And what I'm really excited about is we're seeing a reemergence of some really great independents starting out, like Weir Bazaar, like Weir Bazaar and Bananas, and District 9, I think, is one of them. And like, there's lots of them starting out again, which reminds me of what it was like in the early 2000s.
Yes.
When the Fox B2s and the King Jameses and the Jupiters and the Black Rivers, when they started out. Mm. And so we're seeing this like resurgence, which I think ultimately what's going to benefit is the level of creative work that we're going to start seeing in the industry again.
Yeah.
Which is cool. Exciting times.
Yeah. And I think what's interesting as well about the era that you've mentioned of Fox P2s and that kind of resurgence is that somehow we're also seeing the return of people who had either, whose agencies had either been acquired, partnered with larger brands, or rather networked agencies, and then those people are coming back into the industry as consultants and reopening agencies, as you have with Second Rodeo, led by Mike Stopforth. Tell me a little bit about Second Rodeo.
Fine. I'd love to. So Demographic is essentially a B2B agency.
Yes.
They bought a stake in Halo's business 3 years now. And so we've had a really good partnership over the last 3 years. And we work completely independently. We still run as very independent agencies. Halo's business model, which probably needs a long time to explain it. But I think the most important marketing theory of the last 20 years is called The Long and the Short of It, which is the book by Les Burness and Peter Field, which says brand advertising happens at two speeds. The fast stuff, which is the short, instant returns, instant measurability, performance marketing, and then there's the longer, slower stuff, which is the brand piece, right? Clients aren't interested in where that stuff happens. They're not interested in what's digital, what's on above the line, what's on TV, what's on activations. They're not interested. They need those two things. They need to build a brand and they need to activate the brand at a performance level. So we doubled down 24 months ago. We doubled down on our positioning, which is we want to be a long agency. We're a brand agency.
Yeah.
And so we want to do brand work. To allow us to focus on that means we had to say no to the performance stuff.
Yes.
The always on, the social, the performance marketing, the digital campaigns. And that, you know, Clipdrift as an example, their performance marketing happens in a bar.
Yeah.
It doesn't happen in digital. Mm. And so with a lot of clients asking us for performance marketing solutions, we felt the time was important for us to then start an agency that could specialize this. And the best way I can explain it is that you're not going to put a fine dining chef in a fast food restaurant.
Yeah.
And you're not going to put a fast food chef in a fine dining restaurant.
Yeah.
There are different skill sets. They're both critically important. The most important word in the long and the short is and. They have to be both.
Yeah.
One without the other doesn't work or doesn't work as well. And so we now have the long and the short in two agencies, in Halo and Second Rodeo.
Mm.
And it wasn't Mike's first rodeo. He ran Cerebra for 12 years, and hence the name, which is gets a lot of smiles and it's launched really well, and people know about it. And we found a lot of success recently. Clients are buying into that model of having the brand agency and the performance agency, but under one roof, two different skill sets, two different specialities, and able to service clients with one point of contact, as opposed to the traditional model, which was your above-line agency or your digital agency or your through-line agency. Like, clients don't care about where it goes. They don't care about the media. They care about what is it achieving at a business objective, at a brand objective, and at a sales objective.
Yeah. You've also been doing quite a lot in recent times, and I think it was last year when you had that conference, the Conspicuous conference, and a couple of weeks ago, I think there was something as well that
Second
was happening
one,
in Cape Town. Yeah, and it looks to me as though everything that you've been doing almost led to that point, but you've always been almost, I think, to the word conspicuous in every way. What is it about that positioning, I suppose, that's so attractive?
Yeah, so our positioning is we make standout brands and brands stand out. Mm-hmm. And that is, we're very clear to that. Making standout brands is the design and strategy piece, and making brands stand out is the creative and communication piece, and which Pineapple is an example. And what does that mean? Brands need to be more conspicuous.
Mm.
I think brands, there's almost this like inherent, it's almost like a fear of success.
Yeah.
I don't know, if you're in the brand space, you have to be seen.
Mm.
And people want to, they're looking for the sure thing, and they do what everyone else is doing, and they're stopping themselves from actually being seen in the markets. And people, and conspicuous is not normally a positive word only.
Yeah.
But we think it can be, and brands need to act in a conspicuous manner. So we've built this property now, which is really, I guess, our own brand marketing.
Mm.
is this opportunity to engage with marketers and experts in the field and bring out the experts. So we brought out Mark Ritson, we brought out, we had Adam Morgan, who wrote Eating the Big Fish, which is the challenge of brand theory.
Yeah.
We had Nick Asprey, who speaks a lot about the problem with purpose marketing. And we're starting to have these really important conversations. It gave us the platform to create a bi-monthly newsletter called Conspicuous. And I guess it's our own efforts to market ourselves and get more marketers to think about brand and performance in different ways. But the focus of Conspicuous is really in the brand space to help brands realize the importance of standing out and getting noticed and building traction and creating emotional campaigns and, which is the stuff that we know is the good stuff, right?
Yeah.
And that's the stuff that grows brands.
Yeah. So we usually have a question that we ask our guests to leave for our next guest. And one of our previous guests was Seth Cindy.
Oh, wow.
Of bananas, no. Right?
And this is going to be a bananas question.
And I think the question that he left was, when was the last time you took your client out to lunch with an idea you truly believed in and got buy-in?
It happens probably more often than yeah, it happens quite a lot. I gave an idea to a client 2 weeks ago.
Yeah.
That is on paper inherently risky. And I think it's a really big idea. And so that was 2 weeks ago. I did it over drinks. It wasn't ever lunch, Seth. But yeah, I can probably think of 3 or 4 occasions this year that we've done it with our clients. There's a campaign that we're working on at the moment with Capital Legacy that needed a lunch.
Yeah.
It needed a lunch. It's over the line, and so we're rolling it out now, which will be probably in markets early in the new year.
No, oh, that's amazing. Now it's your turn, Dean, to leave a question for our next guest on their creative process, thoughts on the industry. I don't know yet who will fill that question to, but yeah.
There's something Malusi said which I loved, which was, are we playing not to lose or are we playing to win? And so my question, framing that in context, are we all playing to win? And what I mean by that is, are we afraid of success? You know, are we putting work out there that we're more confident won't fail than we're confident it's going to succeed? And what as an industry can we do better to sell that not only to a marketing client but right the way up to the C-suite?
Great question, Dean. Thanks so much.
Pleasure. Thank you, guys. Really nice to chat to you again.
Yeah. Thank you.